Sanlis Obispo County Flood Control and Water Conservation District Zone 3 Advisory Committee. Can we get a roll call, please?
Sure. Member Ikeda.
Here.
Member Bright.
Here.
Member Wallace.
Here.
Member Gehring.
Here.
Member Angelo.
Here.
And Member Vardis.
Here.
And Chairperson Ray.
Here. That moves us to item 3, public comment. This is the opportunity for members of the public to address the committee on items that are not on tonight's agenda. Is anyone here to speak on something that is not on this evening's agenda? Come on up.
Could we go to item 2, actually, if you don't mind?
Did I skip right over it?
Yeah,
oh, I sure did.
Right,
item 2, excuse me, just one second.
Problem.
I made you work so hard. I went right past it.
You like being
that's
chair?
The rotation of chair and vice chair. Sorry, John.
No, that's fine. You didn't want to give it up. You're having too much fun.
Leave her there.
Yeah. So this is a new item that was implemented with the adoption of the new bylaws by your advisory committee, and it's the rotation of the chair on a rotating basis per contractor instead of type vote. So we're implementing that for the first time, and we will now have the City of Grover Beach as chair and the member from the City of Pismo Beach as vice chair. So if you would like to hand over the gavel and turn over the seat now, we can
sure.
do so.
Absolutely. So that means, Ms. Bright, I guess we'll be changing spots.
Okay.
Do we need to make a motion before that happens?
No, it's
just
by rotation.
Okay, okay. Mm-hmm. Excellent.
All
right.
Well, I'm all settled in here. And
we're switching one Karen for another.
Yeah.
Yeah, she should get the center.
Yeah.
Come on over.
Just move the gavel.
All right.
Be a lot easier. There we go.
All right, there we go.
Better. Thank you.
Chris, do you want to sit over here?
I think I'm okay right here.
Okay.
All righty then. He doesn't want to be near the gavel anyway.
I don't need to be the center of attention. It's not all the time.
All righty then. Well, here we go then. Well, now we'll move on to item 3, public comment. I believe we have someone here who'd like to speak to that.
Hi, how you doing? My name is Chris Agri. I've never been here before. I don't know what I need to say. Do you want my town or what do you want? Just my name?
Your name is fine.
Chris Agri, great.
Your town, if you'd like to give it
to us. I live in Oro Grande. But I'm here to talk to you about Camp Mabel French at Lopez Lake, the Boy Scout camp that the Boy Scouts of America have been talking about giving up the lease, okay? I'm a volunteer with the Scouts, been on the Camp French Committee for years and years. Group of volunteers are very upset and concerned that the camp may cease to be a youth camp. And I know there's a lot of stuff up in the air, I get all that. We'd like to talk to you folks about a group of volunteers forming up, starting a nonprofit to run the camp pretty much the same way it's being run, with the same ranger, open to all youth groups and other groups within reason. I don't know that you have any plans for the camp. I'm guessing you probably don't, since you just now heard within the last couple months that the Boy Scouts want to give it up. It's probably safe to say that the status quo wasn't a problem for anybody. It's a youth camp. It's being well run. It's being taken care of. One of my big concerns is if the county takes it over to run it as a campground, even if they make an emphasis for youth, we have a lot of building issues and things that are going to have to be fixed before it can be reopened again. Whereas we would like to work on a way we can work out a new lease with a nonprofit with you guys, keep running it, rebuild the bathrooms, rebuild the ranger quarters, do all that stuff ourselves, which we're already working on doing, just basically letting the Boy Scouts of America out of the equation. Don't know exactly who we need to talk to about that. One of our, a member of our group got a hold of Adam Hill with the County Board of Supervisors today. He started talking to him. We got the information to talk to Curtis Black, and basically we understand that the third part of that whole group is you guys. So we went searching, found online this meeting. More people would have come. I'm the one person who doesn't have to feed kids and do stuff like that. Anyway, I don't know, again, how to go about
okay.
talking to you about that or opening up a conversation, but I'd like to.
Okay.
We'd like to, I should say.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Isaac, is that your
name? Haggerty.
Haggerty, okay. Well, Mr. Haggerty, I think I'm going to ask staff to address this, please.
Sure. It is actually listed as a future agenda item, as a placeholder, because I don't know if you did see the Tribune a couple of months ago where the Boy Scouts have, I think, about a $50,000 yearly shortfall in being able to run the facility and are considering options for the future of the facility. And there is an MOU and lease agreement with the zone for the use of that facility. So everything is completely preliminary at this time. Parks and Recs manages the recreational facilities around Lopez Lake. So as you mentioned, Curtis Blacks is the park superintendent, and that's where discussions would start, and then obviously in the future come before your committee for a direction on how you'd like to see the facility used, if it does ultimately end being used by the Boy Scouts of America.
I have a question. I'm unclear on the nexus between Zone 3 and that facility.
It's within the boundary of flood zone 3. And considered a facility of Zone 3.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. The campus. Mm-hmm. So does Boy Scouts pay a fee right now to Zone 3, or how does that work for you?
No, I don't think it's I think it's $1 a year.
It's $1 a year to the county.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It was, and they have a 30-year revolving lease that renews every year.
Okay. So if Mr. Haggerty?
Haggerty, yes, ma'am.
If he has other questions, can he?
I'm sorry. If he has other questions, can he speak with you?
Absolutely. I'll leave him my contact information tonight.
Okay. All right.
Super.
Then.
Okay. I know there's no definite plans either way. We're kind of just trying to throw our hat in the ring. We want to be an option. So.
Okay. Cool. Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Question.
Certainly.
John, when would that come back to us? I know it's a future item, but when will that anticipate you coming back to us with that?
I actually wanted to start using future agenda items as a placeholder for items, just to make you aware of them. This is the first time since I've been secretary, I've actually put items in here, and you can see we have three now. So I don't know. It's obviously the Boy Scouts are trying to figure out if they're going to be able to make the revenue that they need, and is that sustainable on a yearly basis to be able to have that sort of revenue to maintain the facility. So it's my understanding that they're talking with parks right now. And then as I know more, I'll bring it back to your committee.
I just didn't know if there was a critical event coming down the road that would need to be addressed by multiple groups here, including ourselves, and whether there was a timing issue here with the Boy Scouts.
I don't think that's going to happen. That only happened if the Boy Scouts walked away from the facility tomorrow, and I don't foresee that happening. My understanding is that there's a lot of love for that facility by many people, and no matter what happens, there's going to be care taken into its future.
Our council has told us they plan to walk away from the lease September 1st, so that's why we're scrambling pretty quick here. I don't, and again, nothing official, but that's what they've told our membership. So, super. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other? Yes, sir.
I have a question. And let me start out with what my recollection is, which could be an error. But my recollection is that all of the property around the lake, including the lake and the dam, was actually financed by the zone. And, in fact, we actually own the property, even though it's being managed and run by the county and the General Service Agency. I'm just wondering if you could clarify that when it comes back to us, how the ownership flowed through and how it was built.
I can. When you say we, do you mean the flood zone?
Right.
Yeah, and the flood zone is the Board of Supervisors sitting as the superintendent.
They sit as the managers of the project, but it's my belief that the underlying property is owned by the zone.
That's my understanding, but I'll research the documents and clarify that.
Right. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments on this issue? Okay. Any other public comment? All right, then. Move on to item 4, the Meeting minutes of May 16th.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any other comments? Okay, then.
Just a voice vote's fine.
Just a voice vote. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All in favor? Aye. And then, so we'll, that's unanimous. So now we'll move on to item four, operations report.
And I'll give that today,
okay,
and
that.
I apologize. I wasn't planning on doing so, so it's going to be very brief. But my understanding of the plant's operating status quo. Haven't had much rain. There was just a little bit, about half an inch in May, none in June, as you all know. And the lake's at about 70% full, with deliveries being pretty much normal for historical uses.
70%, you said?
70, yeah. It's high of 68, so.
It was 68 as reported at the TAC meeting last night.
Right.
Thank you.
Just a comment, Madam Chair. John, I know that with the advent of the state water surplus water pool, the temporary pool, some of the uses of Lopez versus state water will change dramatically, at least for perhaps Oceano. I don't know for sure, but certainly for AVLA and CSA 12. So that will happen in the next report, I would believe, to show some differences of usages between the Lopez and the state water deliveries.
Yeah, I'm going to follow up with our operators and make sure that they're prepared to discuss that at the next
okay.
meeting.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? Okay, then. So then we'll move right along to item six, information items, the flood control zone 1-1A update.
And this is really just for your information of what's happening down here in flood zone 1-1A. They have their meetings, and I'm providing the minutes for your review. And at one of these meetings, when we have a projector and screen, I'm going to play a real nice video about the channel enhancements for Arroyo Grande Creek.
Questions?
John, I had a question on item five on that those minutes about the Sand Canyon Flapgate Alternatives Report. Is that available yet?
I'm going to defer to Mark. He might be more up to date on the status of that report. Do you know, Mark? Please.
Mark Hutchins, the Department of Public Works. My understanding is that the RCD is making further revisions. They're on about the second draft of that document. I don't have a date, but I know that the last draft is 2 weeks old, something like that. So I think we can anticipate turnaround at least by your next meeting, if not by the next TAC meeting, on when we might have that available.
Can you make that draft available to the advisory committee in the meantime for research or looking at?
Not sure. I can make a note and see where it is in that
okay.
status.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? No? All right, then. Very good. So now we'll move on to...
I have one question. They asked the status of the Highway 113th project. I didn't go to this meeting. Does anybody have any update for that?
Uh-huh. Mark Hutchinson again. The Highway 113 drainage project was approved on appeal by the Board of Supervisors. Notice of final action submitted to Coastal Commission and has been appealed to the Coastal Commission. We've been in communication with them on the issues of the appeal, which are largely the same as those that were submitted to the Board of Supervisors. I'll be having conversations with Coastal staff next week about timing on that appeal. We also have to work with them. A portion of the project is in what's called Coastal Original Jurisdiction. So it goes to them anyway, and so we'll work with them about combining all of their processes and getting that through. The other side of the project, which is amendments to the airport layout plan, to allow the sedimentation basin and trap to occur on airport property is slowly proceeding through the Federal Aviation Administration. They've decided that rather than do something called a pencil in, which I presume just means draw a new thing on the old plan, they are in the process of digitizing all of the airport layout plans, so they have taken this opportunity to ask our General Services Department, Airports Division, to redo the whole plan in digital format. So there'll be a delay with that while the funding is secured and things get done. But it's running in parallel with the coastal process. And obviously we're also in communications with Caltrans about funding deadlines and whatnot. So a lot of things happening. We should, coastal on these kinds of things in the past has been a bit long, as much as 9 months from the appeal. But they're, I understand they're refocusing their efforts on these kinds of things, so we might be able to shorten that time frame. But we'll definitely report back to Zone 1 and then to your the committee and obviously Oceano CSD on where we are with those things. Get the word out about hearing dates and locations.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? Nope. Okay, then. So we'll move along now to item 7, the capital projects update. CIP update.
Thank you. And I do have to report, unfortunately, that the Prop 50 funds we'd been talking about for quite a while from the Department of Public Health, they took them back. They might not have ever existed, actually. They sounds like they told a bunch of agencies there was money that was available and had everyone apply and then said, oops, we don't have that money. So we, unfortunately, were one of those agencies that applied for funds we thought we were going to have. So we'd brought to you previously a plan of how we were going to match the funds for those projects and had vetted that through the TAC. And so now we're back after vetting this new plan through the TAC of how we're still going to try to address some of these projects. And so we have a new 5-year capital outlay plan for you to adopt. So what this action item is one is for you to support using our reserves that we're going to use anyway. In lieu of the Prop 50 funds, and then endorse this revised capital outlay plan, which is in your agenda packet as Exhibit D. So just briefly, I'll talk about these projects, because we've been talking about them for quite a few months now. The three that we were going to utilize the Prop 50 funds for were perimeter fencing around the water treatment plant, turnouts, have them all equipped with SCADA equipment for telecommunications with the plant and operations, and then a little project on Orchard Road to provide some drainage enhancements. And so what was discussed at the TAC was that there's actually more savings than we had anticipated. There's about, we thought 250, but it's over 300,000, but 345,000. So use those funds to do the perimeter fencing now, the most important part, and then we'll push out into 16-17 the balance of the fencing and implement the SCADA right now. I believe that's a very important project to still continue with, and then use the most of the project savings for that, and then we're going to eliminate the Orchid drainage. And that was always seen as a project that if we got grant funds for it, we'd do it, but it's a very low priority in our 5-year capital outlay plan. So that's basically, if you look at Exhibit D, it outlines, obviously what's been previously approved, and then over the next 5 years, how we plan on implementing these projects. And the one significant change there is obviously no grant funds, about $500,000 in grant funds aren't there, and then the elimination of the Orchid drainage project. So again, I'm happy to take any questions, but looking for the endorsement of this 5-year capital outlay plan.
Questions?
I just have a quick one. I was trying to put side by side, but they're back to back. The proposed and the proposed revisions, and it says proposed final, but that's what came out of TAC and coming towards us. And the best I could tell is it went through as it was proposed. There's no change between.
That's my understanding.
Okay, mm-hmm. Just making sure that they didn't have any issue there. All right, thank you.
Questions? Any others?
So just to clarify, the Orchid project was just a nicety, not necessarily required to spend?
Yeah, it's pretty low on the totem pole.
There is some reason to do the Orchid project if we get a chance to, because right now, if a vehicle carrying hazardous material spills on Orchid Road at the terminal reservoir, the drop inlets will drop that material into both sides of the reservoir. And so the idea was to drain anything that spilled on that highway into the northern tip of the reservoir, which isn't used for water supply at present. So there is some reason to do that someday in the future if we can find the funding to do it.
And I agree. We're not eliminating it from consideration ever. It's just it's not going to be a project implemented in the next 5 years right now.
Okay, now I have a question.
Did you have a question? Oh, go ahead, John.
Go ahead. John, just a question on the amounts that are shown for previously approved. For example, on the SCADA system, you have $345,000 that was previously approved for the SCADA system. How is that accounted for? Is that temporarily placed in reserves with some sort of a contingency on it that it's reserved for this future project specifically? Or is that drawn out of general reserves? Because I don't think you've spent any money on it yet, but yet you show previously approved $345,000. This proposed file?
Oh, that's a difference that I didn't see.
Yeah, and I'm new to this, but my understanding is that in order to stabilize rates, you were implementing this five-year capital outlay plan and approving budget set-asides, and you might be setting aside for a certain year but not implementing, so that money is set aside and then used when the project's implemented. So it might be a two-year set-aside, and then the project's implemented in year two when the accumulation of the total funds are available.
So basically it's an earmarked piece of our reserve money for the specific project?
That's my understanding. So that way you have the stabilized rates every year. You're shooting for expending about $500,000 every year.
Yeah, that was a real conscious decision on a lot of the agencies, including Roy Grandy, because they were getting hit with a large variance in the amount of money per year. So the consensus was that it would be really nice to go ahead and smooth out the cash flow to about $500,000 a year, and you guys have been really good at doing that. But I just was interested in how the accounting is done for the previously approved, whether it's an earmarked piece of reserves, and therefore what is remaining unreserved in reserves, if I can express it that way.
And I don't know, but I can follow up and find out and send an email out to everyone.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Laurie, you're first.
You were mentioned three items. One of them was the security fencing. And
SCADA system?
Yeah, and the SCADA system. What was the third one?
The Orchid drainage.
Okay. Right. That was the only three that you were talking about?
Correct.
Okay.
I guess I have a question that perhaps it could be answered through an email, and that is I had trouble following the $345,000 savings through the proposed final budget. In other words, I don't see how it's folded into that budget. It's just not obvious to me, unless someone else can explain it.
You know, I just found it as I was asking what the difference was, if I may, between the proposed revisions and the proposed final. It looks like the only difference between the two of them is moving the budget excess from the CIP budget excess column on the proposed revisions over to approve it to use for the SCADA system, which puts it into a previously approved category, but it's a little misleading because it's not previously approved by this body. It's previously approved by the TAC. So I think that's the difference there. So it's misleading because it makes it look like we previously approved that, but we didn't. Is that right, John? Am I reading that right?
Well, that 345 was previously approved in a prior budget, and it's savings. So you approved it for other projects.
But not for this project.
Yeah.
I guess where I had trouble is if you look at the proposed final, and look at the total for all years of $3,650,000 and go back to the approved budget of $3,759,700, I'm having trouble reconciling the $512,000 that we did not get from Prop 50 against the $345,000 that we did save and that final number. It doesn't seem to add up to me, and maybe it's because I don't understand
how. Did you cut ORCID out of the equation? Did you eliminate the ORCID project? I'll have Jenny Berenick follow up with you, that's going to be the best resolution to this.
That could be the difference. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, thank you.
That's exactly the difference.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Then I'm
I try so hard to anticipate all your questions before the meetings, but it's impossible.
We try really hard to think of new questions.
Yeah.
Other questions? Comments? Okay. I have a really basic question since I'm kind of new to this. SCADA, what does that mean?
I don't know what it stands for, so I know someone here does. But it's a radio communication with the turnout valves and the flow mounts through the pipelines back to the control plant or the operators to tell them what's happening in the field without being in the field.
So, okay.
Is that a good answer?
So it's just an acronym for something.
Remote controls.
Some kind of remote control thing. Okay. Thank you. And you answered my other question. WTP is the water treatment plant. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which we are hopefully going to do a tour in September.
That'll be great. Yeah. Yes, that'll be very helpful. Do you anticipate any possible future grant funding opportunities?
Always hope for them.
Okay.
This one was one that came out of the blue, and we might see some. I don't have a good answer for that.
I'm just wondering, do they come along very often?
Less and less.
Yeah.
Definitely less and less.
I kind of thought so.
We have a pretty good track record of keeping. We have both a federal and a state lobbyist retained, mm-hmm. and are in correspondence with them on a very regular basis and know what's coming down ahead in the pike and sometimes before many of our competitors, so we're pretty good about tracking that.
Okay, that's good to know. Okay, so then what kind of an action do we need here? We need a motion?
A motion and a second to endorse the revisions for this new Exhibit D, and then...
And now is there somewhere
In that motion was the use of the reserves. That would be helpful.
And now, in here somewhere, does it tell me if we need a voice vote or if we need a...
We can get away with voice votes on pretty much everything.
I have one more question on this. We're talking about the funding that we're not getting. And then, without the Prop 50 grants, there's no project savings and no longer considered as an outlay plan. But then you have actual Zone 3 capital project savings at the end of 2012-13 of $345,000. So where are we coming up with the difference? Are we going to do anything at all, or are we just going to set it aside for savings for next year?
No, what we're doing is we're eliminating a project and pushing out projects into the future.
Okay.
And
so is the fencing one of them that we're going to go ahead and do?
We're going to phase, yes. Okay. We were going to do it all at once, and then when we didn't get the grant funds, we're going to now... surround the most important part, and then in future years, I think 15-16, we'll have the money to do the remainder.
Has there been any problems with it? Not is there like a barbed wire fence or something?
Yeah, that's what it is. Just a three-wire barbed wire around most of it.
Yeah, it's going to be a significant improvement.
Okay. All right. I was thinking we might be able to use that money somewhere else if it hasn't been a problem before.
I think this is one of the higher priority projects for the TAC. They've wanted this to happen for the security of a water treatment plant. It's pretty important.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam Mayor, I move that we endorse the 5-year capital outlay plan as shown in Exhibit B with
the understanding that the $345,000 that was previously excess CIP budget is now considered part of the previously approved budget.
Second.
Okay. Very good. We have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Did we need something else for the reserve use?
He put that in his motion.
Okay. He followed Thank that you. Up. Okay, very good. So that motion passes unanimously. And now we, item eight, there is no action item there. So we'll continue on to item nine. That is a HCP update.
And Marge Hutchinson will be giving that update to everybody today without the benefit of a projector.
Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, our projector down. We have one on our way. I expect to be here shortly.
We'll be right about when we're done.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So now you know the full story. And he's going to do the best he can.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Mark Hutchinson, Department of Public Works, Environmental Programs Manager. They always tell you this is going to happen sooner or later, and so we're gonna see if I can do this or not. I want to start, however, by directing your attention to the staff report, and on page five, under Technical Advisory Committee Discussion. You'll note in the minutes you just approved records our discussion at the last advisory committee meeting about the progress of the water availability analysis and the HCP, our efforts to engage with the consultant and try to move the project forward and get it back on track, and our lack of progress in that area. And we committed to moving those efforts to some sort of conclusion and then coordinating with the TAC. Unfortunately, our efforts to coordinate the TAC also had technical difficulties because their meeting was 1 week later than usual last Thursday, and we discovered upon showing up at the TAC that they did not get an agenda or a copy of this report. So some of the TAC members were not in attendance because they didn't realize this was going on, and others had very little chance to read through an eight-page report. Now, of course, the TAC members, the longer-term ones, are very much up to speed on our efforts in the HCP with the consultant, just as your advisory committee is. But our plan was to let them look at this exact language, except for the paragraph that says, you know, the agenda didn't get out, and so that they could then communicate with the individual advisory board members. We were able to contact most of the TAC members, but people are on vacation and that sort of thing. There's a different sort of a range of opinions on where we go, but as this is scheduled for your advisory committee and we made a commitment to bring it and it was already printed in your agenda, we thought, well, let's go ahead and get the advisory committee fully up to speed on the TAC, what this is about, and then, of course, your committee can make a decision on how you want to proceed from there, whether we go with this recommendation, whether we pause a bit, go back with the TAC, or whether we do this. You know, the plan, obviously, if we were to go ahead, would to engage the TAC in a significant way in preparing a request for qualifications, because there's a great deal of experience and knowledge on that body about the details of this kind of work. So I prepared a PowerPoint that was going to make this perfectly clear and answer all the questions before they were asked. And we're going to see if we can do that with a paper version. The downside is I can't move the slide when it gets a little sticky. So two key events, again, highlighted in your staff report. We do have changes in staffing. Doug Bird, our hydraulic operations manager in the utilities division, has retired after many, many years. Complete and total project management of this has fallen to me in the environmental division. I will continue with Katie Drexage, one of my environmental resource specialists, and the utilities division is assigning Jill Ogren, who's one of our senior project engineers, to the effort. So we have a change in project management and also a new team member, although she's not new to the county or certainly to Zone 3 or Zone 1. Jill is the key planning engineer for the waterway management plan and the liaison to Zone 1, so very familiar with the Rio Grande Creek and a longtime county employee. And then the subject of today's discussion is that we're recommending a change, a significant change, in one of our key consultant team members. The next slide just has a very brief timeline, and we're getting into some of the issues that we're concerned about without going into details. When we look at the HCP as a whole, the first contract and we're talking about two consultants, were involved with was written in 1999. And in addition to that was a number of sub-consultants handling legal and some geologic issues. That team produced an HCP that was submitted to the agencies in 2004. It included the development of a reservoir operations model. And that's a model where we can feed different release rates and different release numbers and delivery numbers, and it would tell us how it affects the reservoir in the long term. That team produced an ACP in 2004. It was not well received by the agencies. Fish and Wildlife Service immediately requested that it be rewritten in an updated format, and that effort by the consultant was largely unsuccessful. National Marine Fisheries Service also commented that the modeling that was done did not use the protocols that they were expecting. So the model is good, but it wasn't run using some assumptions and methods that they wanted to see in it. At that point in time, a new contract was written, and the two prime consultants essentially switched roles. One became the prime and the other the sub. And the prime's role was to negotiate with the agencies. That was the biologist, and the sub's role was to revise the model. The sub's been working on that model revision since 2004. The prime consultant, as near as I can tell from the record, participated in two technical memorandums and a very, very rough draft HCP, and then essentially exited the project and ceased to do any work on it. In 2011, from the subconsultant, we received the revised release program with assurances that it had been blessed by the National Marine Fisheries Service, although not in writing. At that point in time, we were informed by the State Water Resources Control Board that they would need something called a water availability analysis, which was not in any of the scope documents or discussed anywhere in the HCP or any of the modeling. I put that in my staff report. How come that didn't come up earlier? I am at a complete loss to find out why the State Water Board didn't bring it up earlier and why the consultant team, who presumably based on their proposals were experts and experienced in this, also didn't bring it up. But when it was brought up, we were operating on the assumption that the downstream release program met all downstream water rights. It's rather an obvious basic criteria. And that the water availability analysis would be a subset of all the modeling work in the format that the State Water Board needs. And then, as you know, we began to run into some, what I consider some significant difficulties. The water availability analysis was due in 60 days, and at the end of 5 months, we had nothing. Eventually, we did get a draft, and it was disappointing, to say the least. So we engaged the consultant with a series of questions and concerns and a series of conference calls, and there seemed to be an unwillingness to engage with us in some serious conversations about the format of the document. There were, in addition to several really good topics that were raised, although not related to water availability analysis, there were other items put into the document that ran completely counter to our philosophical approach to the HCP. And I believe we've discussed this example. My review of the record shows that from day one, the district would commit to measuring the downstream release rates into the creek at the dam. That was a bottom line, because if we committed to some point below the dam, then we were committing to supplying all the water needs in between, no matter how well they changed. And then in 2011, the water availability analysis has a long section about how the district should commit to a specific flow rate at the Arroyo Grande Creek gauge, which is, you know, completely counter. The most significant difference, though, that it was calculating agricultural riparian right water annual use rates that were significantly higher than what the downstream release program had proposed and we presume been negotiated with National Marine Fisheries Service. So we still fail to understand how we can have from the same consultant a water availability analysis that says in the summertime you're going to need what we've been releasing, around 6 cubic feet per second, but we should propose to the National Marine Fisheries Service that we release 3. And I'll take the hit for this one. When I pointed that out rather forcefully for about the third time, the consultant stopped talking to me. But when I look back at it, we, the district in Zone 3, contracted with a team of professionals. As near as I can tell, in 1999, the statement of qualifications looked good. There was a solid recruitment process. There were interviews. There was a good spread of folks on an evaluation panel, and it looks like a good, solid team. And for reasons that I can't ascertain, it just doesn't seem like it came together. So we find ourselves 13, almost 14 years later. We have a lot of good documents, which I'll go into, but we don't have an HCP. And a year ago, our assumption was, when we hired H.T. Harvey and committed to a significant budget increase, that we were on the verge of submitting us to the agency and powering through to a permit. Now when we look back, we have a lot of good stuff, but we're not at that point. Fundamental concerns in dealing with the consultant and looking at work project, as it appears, there really was no ongoing oversight from folks who had HCP experience. You know, this is a rare animal that we're dealing with, and it would be, I think, unreasonable to expect that any agency in the county would have staff who are experienced in HCPs. And as we've learned, some of the consultants who seem to have experience actually don't. There was also apparently no results-oriented approach. The project over the last 9 years appeared to be just a series of tasks. Complete this study, complete this report, and the oversight of what is the point of all of this, where are we going with it, didn't seem to be there. And then this key one, when the administrative draft water availability analysis is in conflict with a downstream release program that's been underway for more than 5 years from the same team, you know, you have to ask questions about who's, obviously nobody's looking at the bigger picture or even the smaller picture and tracking this. And then our attempts to solve those problems, there was just no positive engagement in that process. Slide number 5, which is in black and white. This one looks really good on the slide. This is I've showed this to the advisory committee before. When I showed it to the TAC, I commend the TAC members, about 3 of them picked out the problem I was leading to about 3 slides before I got to this one. But what we're really looking at, that top squiggly line shows what the downstream release program proposes for a wet season release. It's even got 2 peaks in the wintertime. And it's a very sophisticated program about how to determine what those are. We would measure flows on Lopez Creek, which is, through some very good work, represents about 40% of the inflow to Lopez Dam, and we would run our releases up to a certain percentage with a maximum, and it's all also based on the level of the dam and then built into the model. In dry winters, and again, these terms are well-defined and backed up by the modeling analysis, which is the next kind of smooth hump line down, there would be lesser wintertime releases. Now, the point behind wintertime releases is to try to simulate natural creek flows as much as possible. These higher wintertime flows will redistribute gravels, which the fish need. They'll flush the gravels out, move sediments. They'll also open the sandbar so that fish can find Arroyo Grande Creek and also have enough water to move up into spawning areas. But the bottom line there, which in the real slide I think is red, that in the wintertime shows very low releases in the 3 cubic feet per second, and then in the summer goes about 6 and 7.5 is what the district has been releasing over the last almost a decade now in response to riparian water right needs. The farmers immediately downstream and all the way down to at least the city of Arroyo Grande are dependent on creek flow. Some of them pump directly from the creek, some have creekside wells, and anecdotal experience and actual experience shows that when the creek flows below 6 CFS, their wells go dry, their pumps don't have water, they have riparian rights. Now, it is true they have essentially rights to a flow in the creek that matches whatever's coming into the lake, but in looking at back at some of the records of the district, traditionally when summer flows are above 6 CFS, we're storing water, which is inconsistent with our water rights permit. But in drier years, when there's enough water in the dam, which there has been to date, we release more than's coming in. So we have basically a handshake, unwritten deal with the water right holders. But what this graph shows is that if we release or reduce our summertime releases to 3 cubic feet per second every summer, and that's the highest it gets, there's no possible way to supply the riparian rights. I've looked at a lot of documents lately in this project file, and I think I've traced back where this thing got off track, which is too probably complex to go in at this moment, but understanding that from the consultant side, most of the work was being done by an engineer who's a modeler. He runs a mathematic model without the support of his management or a geohydrologist. They started working with annual totals. Well, if you look at these graphs, if you say, well, the farmers need 2,500 acre feet, and it in all three scenarios, you get 2,500 acre feet. But the farmers don't need 2,500 acre feet in January. It needs to be there in August. And I think that's probably where it got off track. But next slide. There is value in the work products that we have. There's technical biological reports that are good and have been updated regularly, not by the prime consultant, but by separate ones that you can actually see in the budget spreadsheet. There's also other technical reports establishing how to determine a wet year and a dry year based on historic rainfalls and historic flows done by this engineering consultant team, and very well done. So the technical stuff, as near as we can tell, looks really good. We have the reservoir model, and that is the key tool. It uses a commercial software, but that is the model that tells us what's the long-term effect on our ability to supply water from different release scenarios. It uses data that's gathered by the district on a monthly basis all the way back to 1969. I did note that for reasons I can't quite understand, the consultant stopped updating the model in 2004, almost 10 years ago now, and that's a significant time frame. So if we were to move forward, one of the tasks would be to go ahead and add the data that we have into the model and extend the number of years that it's based on. The downstream release program, although I've criticized it some here tonight, the way it's set up, the way it describes the background, the way it proposes the release program, the way it explains it, although it's complex, is good and has been, so far as we know, vetted by National Marine Fisheries Service. If there's a problem with it, I've been terming it the best biological case alternative. It's not really the best biological case. This is the best feasible biological case. The consultant was working with some parameters established by the TAC and endorsed by the advisory committee, 1998, 1999. I don't have the specific ones, but it says, the project must always be able to deliver its contracted water. So we have to meet the contracted amounts. The project has to survive, I believe it's a 7-year drought plus 2 years, and deliver contracted water. A couple of more parameters. So within those boundaries, this downstream release program does the best possible job you could do for fish. but it doesn't appear that it meets downstream water rights, so it's not legally feasible. And the consultant, through various other means, has identified summer storage possibilities, which is going to be an important consideration as we move forward in the impact analysis and especially the water rights permit. And then I created three slides with little boxes, which are not going to work very good without the overhead, unfortunately, because I can't even read them here. The first one, I have to put a warning out there. You know, there's a line that says HCP and one below it says NEPA CEQA. And I show the NEPA CEQA process as three boxes. And those of you who've been involved are laughing at me. This is a much, much, much simplified version of these processes just to illustrate where we're at. But you see in the HCP, technical reports is the first thing, reservoir model, downstream release program, that would lead to an HCP. We would then do an impact analysis, drop down to NEPA, look at alternatives, that's required in NEPA CEQA, have our final documents, give that back to Fish and Wildlife, NIMS, get our final take permit, Section 10, you'll see, or implementation agreement, all the same thing. Once we had that in hand, we'd go to the State Water Board and revise our water rights permit. So we find out, as we flip the page, there's this other thing called the water availability analysis. That becomes the new bottom line. And then we discover through the water availability analysis process that there may be issues with the top line, the downstream release program. And then this was going to be the really good part. You notice the NEPA process says impact analysis alternatives. So when I flipped the page again, I thought, if I take the alternatives that we were going to do in NEPA, move it up, call the best case biological one of the alternatives, and work from there using the information and water availability analysis, I make good use of everything that we've had and move ahead. The complexity is there's actually more steps and more boxes than we all understood as short as a year ago. But it makes use of all of the good information that I think we have. It also occurs to me, this, what I'm calling the best case biological alternative, and I'm sure all of you have been involved in this, if we had directed the consultant to say we need an alternative that meets our basic parameters as the best we can do for fish but also meets downstream water rights, here we would be with that alternative, and I would be telling you, you know, we need to do a best case for fish to show the resource agencies how close we are or how far we are from that, because that's our impact analysis. So I suppose in the big picture, it doesn't really matter which alternative you do first, but you have to do one of them complete, get the process right, get the modeling right, and then you can go on from there. But on the other hand, I don't think it should take another 13 years to do this. So our recommendation, straight out of the staff report, is that you endorse moving forward with a reformed project team, which would include circulating a request for qualifications. So rather than doing what's called a request for proposals to get a cost for specific things, we would go out and say, we need a firm that's expert in doing these things. The way that would work is we got to go back to the TAC and need to access the expertise there. I need to get their opinions. How do we write this RFQ to get the best firm, the right firm? How do we go through a selection process to make sure we have the right people? And you essentially create a list and a ranking, and hopefully of really top-notch firms. And then from that, we would have to decide, do we begin a negotiation with the first team on how much it's going to cost for specific tasks, or do we request proposals from the top two or top three? And that's really a kind of a decision for the TAC. You can do an RFQ and then a negotiated scope. You can do an RFQ and then an RFP, and then it becomes competitive. And I think, you know, I would prefer to make that decision after we get the list of consultants, but I think our purchasing policies might require that we be a bit more open with the consultants so they know what they're getting into. Because putting together statements of qualifications, maybe doing interviews, doing presentations, can be a significant task. And I would propose relying on the TAC. But I have to come back to the staff report and point out that the TAC hasn't necessarily heard me say this, hasn't seen the PowerPoint, although neither of you, but they didn't get to see the staff report and as a group discuss it. So I think it would be important that the committee members give us some direction on where we are at this point. Do we want to move forward this recommendation at this time, or do we want to go back to the TAC and perhaps add more detail to the recommendation or even change it, I suppose, and then come back to your committee at the September meeting?
Madam Chair, can I make a comment?
Please.
I received a call from Teresa McLish, real concerned about this, and her major concern was she really wanted to ask us if we would consider holding back on making a determination tonight. Her concern was exactly what you said in the staff report, which was that the TAC, basically that even if you had had the chance to meet separately with each of the TAC members, that they haven't had a chance to sit down together and work on this. So she asked if I would, I'm not going to make a motion out the gate, just for discussion put out there that we could table this for now until next meeting and give the TAC a chance to sit down with it, because she really felt like it was critical to answer the questions that Mark was just discussing about, you know, making that RFQ solid, trying to decide exactly what that scope was going to look like and to get this right before we start pushing it forward, even though she understood that this committee really wanted to, we felt like we had dragged our feet long enough. She asked if we could put it off one more meeting.
Madam Chair, may I respond or comment on that? I think the recommendation to direct staff to work with the TAC to develop a selection process.
Microphone, sir. Thank you.
I think I understand Ms. McLish's point of view, but I think in City of Pismo Beach staff voice similar concerns. But I think, you know, the direction that the advisory board can make is to direct staff to work with the TAC to develop a selection process and to execute that, to bring in the best qualified firm to do this. Because obviously the fact that the water availability analysis didn't come up before, when that's a critical component for formulating the project description, that I had the downtown release program and the alternatives for both the HCP and for the impact analysis, after what, close to 10 years of work, shows how folly the work's been executed. And I really question the qualifications of the firm that's been doing this work. So I think, you know, the direction can be to formulate a selection process for staff to work with the TAC, whether we want then staff to bring that selection process back to the advisory board for approval before they implement it. That's one approach. But I think, you know, it's prudent that we start the process and direct staff to work with the TAC to come up with that, to develop that procurement process and come up with some selection criteria. One thought would be to perhaps at one juncture have a NIMS representative on the selection process so they feel like they're a part of it. And maybe when it gets to the point that the best, the top three have been identified, that those top three are presented to the advisory board for our input before the top firm is selected. The other thought, the second comment I had, is that when we get to the point where we're developing, we have a new firm on board, and they're working through the WAA and developing the downtown release the downstream release program and refining that and developing the alternatives, that we make sure, that I think there's evidence that's been done today, but that NIMS is heavily involved in that. My experience in the past working with State Water Resources Control Board is they won't stand up in front of a project if it doesn't have buy-off from NIMS, because steel have been a critical species. And so we need to make sure, I think, that NIMS is on board with this and that we have their input all the way through, especially before we embark on the actual impact analysis or releasing the document for review. The last question, and maybe it's getting way off base, but with the downstream riparian water right holders, if there's some change that needs to be made to make sure they're held whole, which can then affect our ability to meet species requirements, is all the burden put on the Zone 3 and not on those downstream water riparian water right holders? Do they have their first in line, or their right supersedes?
Yeah, general repair and rights are prior rights.
So, okay, so no matter what, they have to be met. They have to be made whole.
Correct, but
okay.
As we pointed out, when we have these variabilities and natural summer flows, there's options, it appears, to use the reservoir to both parties' benefits so that we could essentially store unused riparian water in wet winters.
Okay.
And then either deliver that in dry winters or share that, depending.
So there could be some level of negotiation as part of this process.
Certainly.
Okay.
But it's because, you know, a riparian right is generally superior and mm-hmm. prior to an appropriative right. But at the same time, being able to work with farmers in dry years and supply water that they otherwise wouldn't have a quote-unquote right to is a benefit perhaps of the project, but certainly to the agricultural industry and the community. And those have always been overreaching goals of the effort.
Okay, thank you. So I think bottom line is the direction, the request is let's cut bait and let's formulate and execute a selection process to bring in a new firm. So the direction it can be from this board to for staff to work with the TAC to formulate and execute a selection process. Whether that selection process needs to develop and come back to the advisory board for approval prior to execution, that's a consideration for this group. That'd be my suggestion.
That was exactly mine, just so you
okay.
know.
I have another question, I'm sorry. All these firms that were involved with this that we spent $944,000 on, are any of these guys still going to be listed as part of this thing, or are they eliminated out of it? You have environmental, hydraulic engineers.
Let me look at the list. I don't know that
Stetson,
we would.
Stetson Hansen, H.T. Harvey and Associates.
Let me just give you just a sense of who those folks are quickly, where we have consulting costs in the firm name. Chronic is the original water rights firm. Mm-hmm. And at some point, the attorney who was advising the district on the HCP declared a conflict of interest because of something and recused herself from advising us on this project. So they're essentially not involved and haven't billed for a long time. Stetson and Hansen are the primary team that were teamed one way and then the other. Personally, I think it would be interesting if we went out with an RFQ as an aside. So we've been in contract with those two teams since 1999. The current contract is 2004. I don't think you would find it odd if I was standing up here saying everything's great, the firm's great, they're wonderful, but the contract is 13 years old and have been amended four times. We need to go out with an RFQ with the expectation that the firm that's been doing a great job would get the new contract. I think it would be interesting if these guys proposed and said, hey, we know exactly what went wrong with this process and how to fix it, and here's our proposal. I don't know that they will, because they won't talk to me. But so, you know, there's that firm. Thomas R. Payne Environmental, National Marine Fisheries Service, about 5 years ago, asked for a habitat suitability assessment of the creeks above the dam, which is going to feed into some of their long-term decision-making. And this particular firm, but in order to do that, you have to put data collection devices in the stream at various points that record temperature and some other things. And so this firm was, that's their specialty. So they came and did that work for that $23,000, produced the report, and then moved on. Susan Christopher is an environmental firm that did an update of the red-legged frog surveys that Hansen originally did in 1998, because we don't want those things to get out of date and then be rejected and have to be totally redone. H.T. Harvey and Associates was brought on March of 2012, essentially to update and renew and carry forward the HCP, and you actually have one of their work products. And we were anticipating that everything was good The water availability analysis would be done in 60 days. H.T. Harvey would use it, update the HCP, and we'd have this thing submitted by the first of this month. And then you can see the problems with the water availability analysis. So H.T. Harvey is on hold at this point of time, but they would be a key team member as we move forward with a new modeling type firm. And then other vendors, I looked up several of those. There were specific hydrologic engineers that came in and did one-shot reports. One of them looked at the percolation rate into the aquifer from the stream below the dam. I'm not quite sure yet who asked the question. Another firm looked at some of the issues that were data that was looking at how much water in the aquifer above, by the way, the West Wilmar Fault, which is where Highway 101 is, how much water went below that point on an average annual year, so they did some hydrologic work. So there were these technical reports going along that informed some of the modeling and assumptions that were going into inflows into the basin.
Are those reports going to continue to be valid for moving forward, or are they going to have to be, all the stuff had to be redone?
I think for their, you know, they were good reports for the focused purpose.
Okay.
And one of the challenges that we bring on a new team is to be able to try to read through all of those and reconcile them. You know, a lot of this is looking at underground situations and faults and based on well drilling reports and stuff. And as I read through everything, you know, I can find little, I have some questions here and there, and it's nothing major, but, you know, a number here and there doesn't quite cross over as far as the depth of things. But when I mentioned that, you know, there's value in technical reports, these are some of those background reports that I can't imagine they would go out of date. Newer work's been done, so they might be, you know, updated with a new number or a new finding or something like that. But good foundational stuff. So when we look at that consultant list, that's everybody who's been paid any amount of money on it at all. We're really looking at a hydrologic consultant to play the role that Stetson had, although, again, it would be an expanded role. Stetson, for the last several years, has been focused entirely on the reservoir model, simply modeling. That needs to be done in context with hydrogeologic understanding of how the aquifers and the streams work and relate to things. So that firm needs to have some people with a bit more, a broader viewpoint of how things fit together as they move forward.
You're giving me a whole lot more information than I understand. Excuse me, understand. I just want to make sure that we're not going back to the same team that here we are and now we're not going, you know, we've got problems. So, yeah, I'd like to see a bid go out, at least on those two.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if we go out with an RFQ, it's typically widely distributed. And then there would be a review panel made up primarily of TAC folks. And then perhaps an interview, even a presentation process could be to your advisory committee. All of that brought together to see who we're going to work with.
Thank you.
I got a question for Mark. If you go to your slide under fundamental concerns, I'm interested to hear what your thoughts are and how you solved this issue of no ongoing oversight. Who wasn't overseeing what, and how do you see that solved? And the no results-oriented approach, how do you see that being addressed?
I think, well, first off, the county's going to have to play a major role in that. Now, we don't have people who, on my staff or myself, who've written habitat conservation plans. But, you know, I tend to be grumpy about grammar and things like that. And I'm really good at adding up numbers. And it really is, I think, from the county's perspective, of pressing the individual consultants to communicate with each other, to be timely with things, and as a group to develop goals and timelines and you know, results that we hope to achieve in certain times, and then hold the consultant teams to that. I think we've made a great stride forward with H.T. Harvey because, as we saw, they did a peer review on the 2004 HCP in very short order. We're very specific about the shortcomings in it and their recommendations for what needed to be changed. They've been very articulate about why this particular part is key and important, very open with the district and communicated with the district, very fast response time with my staff and theirs. So they're anxious to move forward. They understand the need to get the HCP written and get it done. And I contrast that to, for Hanson, became impossible to contact along about 2008. Workload issues or just moving on to the next project. So the first thing is actually we need to get people who understand what it is they're doing and how things work together, and then maintain the teamwork approach. It might be a little easier now than it was in 99 with some of the computer systems we have and that sort of thing, but you simply have to stay on top of it.
And if it gives you any confidence, I, as an observer here for the last year and a half, 2 years, and seeing this unfold, what I'm seeing now develop at the county is we've moved on from project development of the Los Osos Wastewater Project, and I believe did a very good job there developing the project. Mark was the lead on the environmental for that project and bringing it forward for a permit, and ultimately we're about 30% done with construction. And internally, we're formulating a project team similar to that project, and many of the same players are on it as well. And so that, you know, the ongoing oversight and where we're headed internally county-wise is a very similar model to how we met the objectives of that project.
Can I add to that? That's a similar approach for the ETIP with the Nelson Mental pipeline as far as the environmental being permitting?
Yes, very, very much similar. I don't know about the analogy to Los Osos, but...
Okay.
Sure, I'll recover soon.
Mr. Wallace, did you have a comment
Mark,
or question?
Mark, just a couple of questions. I guess a general observation. We need to do it right this time. And
microphone.
Doing that, sorry. In order to do that, I understood following this with attack, what happened with some of the consultants and what you've been talking about. How big is the pool of consultants that have performed water availability analyses and had them successfully reviewed and approved by the state? Is it just a couple firms?
My sense in, one of the things we did was actually, complex. We went to the state website and looked at the sample water availability analysis that they posted and noted the substantial difference between those and what was delivered to us. But there seems to be a pretty broad range of consultants doing the work. It really truly is, a mapping exercise. Our draft water availability analysis took an interesting approach to that, which considering that in our department we have a GIS section that could produce a map showing parcels adjacent to the creek in about 2 hours, was disappointing. You look at the land use. You work with the Ag Commissioner's office and some standard, nationally known schedules to figure out irrigation rates, create a range of values, and work backwards from there and document those things. They're not terribly complicated documents.
My point in asking that is that if there's only 4 or 5 firms in the state that really knock these things out and get them approved by the state, that would really simplify your RFQ process and then subsequent to that for proposals. On the other hand, if there's 20 or 30 firms that do these things, that's a different matter.
My sense is that we're in the more than 20.
More than 20?
Yeah, across California.
Well, I agree with your comment that especially with some of the teamwork in the county maybe dropping off some of the other major projects, like John said, that the county staff can probably process some of the more mechanical tasks for input into a water availability analysis to save us both money and also to be a little closer to the project with a reform team.
That's our intent. We've we've developed some fairly solid approaches to these projects, you know.
Well, finally, Madam Chair, I'm not sure what the difference in the recommendation is between what staff is recommending versus the discussion that Chris brought up.
The recommendation is to move forward with circulating an RFQ, and
right.
we don't have an RFQ ready to go
that
the TAC has seen. That's the problem.
Right. Okay. I wanted to see if we had any more. Did you have any comments or questions?
Well, my only comment was that I'm in favor of moving forward. I guess I ditto what Mr. Vardis said, but you know, never know, in August we might not have a quorum. It's summertime, and then we're going to be 2 months down the road. So if we can get staff to get started, I think it's a good thing. I know it's been 13 years, but we might as well try to get Mark's gung-ho, might as well keep the ball rolling. And I had a question for you, Mark, about these HCPs and, I mean, who has to do these, and how many have been done? Everybody who has a creek?
The HCP itself, believe it or not, from a federal perspective, is described as a mitigation plan. So if we're, quote, unquote, taking endangered species, whether it's fish or frogs, and there's HCPs that are done for all kinds of species, not necessarily creeks, you have to get a permit. To get the permit, you have to have a mitigation plan. And it all sounds really straightforward. But, you know, there are consultants out there who have top-notch people, good environmental people, know biology, and won't touch an HCP for any amount of money. They just don't want to get involved in that complex of a process and the time frame that we're facing and whatnot. But essentially what we need is a permit to modify the flows in the creek with the dam. And that's actually listed as take in the federal regulations, that modifying natural flows in a creek triggers the federal law for endangered species. So to mitigate, well, first we need a permit to do that, and to mitigate our impacts, we need an HCP. But as you can see, they just become enormously complex.
Yeah.
There are probably hundreds across the nation done, because there are some 1,200 listed endangered species in the United States, about half in California. But for steelhead, in California, the only other HCP is in Humboldt County. It's the Humboldt County Municipal Water District has an approved HCP for steelhead. So we would be the second.
How about we get there?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think that's what's making it difficult, is that there's really not much background.
On the one hand, there's not. On the other hand, we're under what's called Section 10 of the Endangered Species Act because we're not a federal agency. If we were, we'd be under Section 7. It's a different kind of permit. They don't have to do an HCP, but the bottom line turns out to be the same, and there's a huge amount of work on steelhead and salmon and whatnot. Unfortunately, most of it from Oregon north has triggered some federal litigation at all levels, which is sometimes interesting to read. We certainly have the Humboldt Municipal Water Company, HCP. I thought it would be the answer to all of our problems, and then I realized that they're dealing with the Mad River, which at times has flows that reduce as low as 3,000 cubic feet per second. Mm. And I realized the difference between our situation and theirs is they have water and we don't.
Right.
Okay. And they ended up with a long-term operations plan that exactly matched fish needs. So they brag about having an HCP, but I'm thinking they got extremely lucky. What they were already doing is what the agencies wanted to see, so they wrote it down and gave them a permit with some minor changes.
Okay.
I just wanted to think that as far as the timeline for this water rights permit, do we have a deadline or anything? Did that pass a decade ago?
What we've got, the state board, I think they have internal goals. They haven't given us, that I've seen, any drop-dead dates or anything like that. You know, and their first idea was, well, we'll just put this on hold until you get the HCP done. I discovered last week that the first time they raised the issue with the water rights permit was 1990, which seems like an awfully long time. Recently, they've been making some suggestions about ways to get a water rights permit in the interim that we could change once the HCP was done. I haven't had direct contact with them, but talking with our utilities division, it seems that they have an idea to get their books cleaned up and whatnot, because they're sitting on apparently many, many, many water rights permits from the 60s that have the same, I think it's simply a wording issue, but they seem to want to get them done.
Well, I imagine, and yeah. It doesn't look like this is happening anytime too soon. So,
one of the problems that came up was they suggested, well, we'll give you an interim water rights permit if you just agree that for the 4 summer months, beginning in June, you just let whatever flows in the reservoir flow out. One of the tasks that Stetson was supposed to perform was to run that into the reservoir model and see what the impact was. We never saw that analysis. I took it upon myself and shared with the TAC to compare what the inflows were for the 4 summer months going back to 1970, how they compared to what we had released downstream, on the assumption that what we released, there was some purpose, some goal, some purpose. I know what it was for the last 10 years relating to agriculture, with the idea that, well, if the inflows tend to match what we release, then maybe that's not a bad idea. And I could not find any relationship at all. What I can show with my graphs is that if we would agree with the State Water Board and match inflows to outflows, we would devastate the steelhead population in the stream hands down within 5 years. So I'm thinking that National Marine Fisheries Service is not going to go for something like that.
No doubt.
A couple of procedural questions and see if we can't get this moving. John, when's the next TAC meeting?
Is it
August 1st?
Yeah, it's the first Thursday of every month. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so it's, and I'm sorry, I don't have the schedule in front of me, so I'm trying to figure out how to get this moving and get us in the most expedient way, but at the same time possibly coming back to us. So our next meeting isn't until September, correct?
Correct.
Right.
So that would give the TAC 2 meetings to hammer out what that scope of work and RFP and whatever else. Do you foresee it taking shorter or longer than that, than 2 meetings?
I'm going to defer to Mark because he'll be working on the RFQ.
I'm going to say that we'll probably take more, but we could get a lot of work done in 2 meetings.
Then we could recommend, as both Chris and I suggested, that we take this back to the TAC, have them do that, and then report back to us whatever progress that
certainly
is by the next, by our
in
next
September?
Meeting. In September.
So we could have a progress report?
Right.
I had a question. So would the RFQ be released before it's, would we be seeking the RFQ approval? Let me rephrase this for a third time. So the RFQ would have to come to the advisory board for approval before it's released, or is that the endorsement or the recommendation would be that we move forward with staff working with the TAC to release an RFQ, recognize a little bit more generalized than an RFP process, and that they execute that process, and then they bring the top 3 or 5 firms to the advisory board, and then we approve requesting an RFP from those top 3 or 5 firms. I'm just wondering what's the juncture that it needs to come back to the advisory, to this board.
My thought was to report out what they decide to do. They haven't even decided whether they're going to do the RFQ or the RFP yet, although we think we know what direction they may go. But they haven't even decided that as a group yet. Is that correct, Mark?
Right, they haven't had the opportunity.
Right.
Yeah, they
so,
haven't even
so
met.
So they can work on that for the next 2 meetings and come back and report out to us. And at that point, if we have a really good idea of what that looks like, we can maybe do what you're saying and say, okay, go ahead as soon as you have it done. And if they don't have it done, then we'll have a status report and maybe we can put in, help figure out how to get that moving forward.
So maybe they could have either an RFQ or an RFP submitted to the advice to this board in September for approval or release. Something to that effect.
I doubt they'll be
that far along by then, but maybe. But at least they'll be to that point where they'll know where they're headed, and they can, will have some idea, and probably have a good draft and a scope of work. I would think, or be close to that. I would think by then.
Oh, certainly.
Yeah, okay.
I
mean, so
from the county staff thing, we'll be bringing drafts and, you know, things to mark up and whatnot, and formulating, you know, as I've listed here, some of the things, you know, that the TAC may want to consider.
Okay. Good.
But again, you know, as we look down the list of TAC members, we have people with years and years of experience in these things, and so, you know, the question RFQ, RFP, I mean, I see that as a discussion and the group coming to a consensus on what's the best way to approach our particular
right.
situation.
So we will know by September. You'll bring something to us by our September meeting.
Something.
Even right. if it's just a progress report.
That's what we want.
Definitely a
so
progress report.
So let's make
report.
A motion
yes.
so we know where we're headed. Okay? So can someone do that?
Yes, I'd like to.
No, sorry, no. Go ahead.
You started.
You go ahead, Chris, because you seem to be on the same wavelength, but somehow we're not connecting here. So you
okay.
go ahead.
I move that we endorse moving forward with a reformed project team, including I'm going to rephrase this. So I move that we endorse directing staff to work with the TAC to reform a project team and develop either an RFQ or RFP for selecting qualifications or proposals for a hydrologic task, including modeling, hydrologic analysis, and production of a water availability analysis, recognizing that RFQ or RFP will be brought back to the advisory board for approval prior to release.
The only other thing
I'd
add in there is
that
we haven't, they were talking about coming up with the scope and things like that as well. So do we need to be that specific about what we're directing?
Yeah, my feeling is we shouldn't be too specific
yeah.
with what we're
yeah,
asking
I don't think
TAC
so either.
To do. I'd rather give
yeah.
them more leeway in how they approach
yeah.
it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think so, too.
Do I need to revise that? Is it too lengthy?
No, I thought it would be a word.
Yeah, we understand.
Mary,
where we're going.
Karen's.
Mary's, I'm not the chair. She keeps
no.
trying to catch
I'm
my
sorry. Oh,
eye.
I'm so sorry.
How about my second?
Yeah.
Yes,
you can second it. And then, did you want to have...
Yeah.
Would you like...
I actually want to ask a few technical questions. Mark,
do we need a microphone? We're going to have to stand here next to the microphone.
And I'm fine. Everybody.
Okay, first of all, we have a motion and we have a second. Okay, so we can clear up that business. Okay, now you may discuss. Okay.
Mark, you had initially, I've had to sit here for 11 years of this stuff, so I really applaud you for digging in there and trying to clean up this mess. You budgeted a 5-year project. It turned into a 13-year project. So I'm not quite sure what the fiscal impact is of their misappropriation of this contract. And one is their accountability. I know they're licensed. I did check after I read the minutes and stuff. And so, did they fulfill the entire scope of work? Did they get paid for the entire scope of work? You know, so I think somebody else asked if the reports had to be revised or updated because some of them were extremely old. But mainly it's fiscal impact reports that I'm thinking of. And how much is your RFQ going out for? A guesstimate. I don't expect that.
Yeah. We, let me try to approach. Well, first off, on the budgeting. Yeah, I'm not sure, you know, what the, I know their contract that they did in 2004 at a specific amount, which I have here somewhere, in excess of $100,000. And it has been amended 4 times for specific tasks. And the project manager at the time concluded that those tasks, for whatever they were billed for, were completed. The contract itself didn't say, you know, deliver an approval from National Marine Fisheries Service because nobody would sign it. This last task for the water availability analysis, it was amended for $77,000 to produce a water availability analysis. Our technical staff and utilities looked at what we did get, and I think the number was about $25,000 to $27,000 worth of work was done. So I believe they've been paid for that, and then we've stopped. Now, the project itself, over the past several years has budgeted at a proposed budget of $102,000, and the expenditure rate has been in the high 80s since its inception. Last year, so more than a year ago, we decided when we brought H.T. Harvey on, the water availability analysis, we were going to make a big push, finish this thing. We raised the budget to some $300,000. The difference between $100,000 and $300,000 comes from district reserves. That was also a convention that was discussed with the advisory committee so that we would hold the contribution to this thing at no more than $100,000, again, trying to stabilize rates. We didn't get anywhere near $300,000 worth of work done or spent. So none of the consultants, we were some $200,000. I think that's the number I put in the staff report under the projected budget because H.T. Harvey's come to a complete stop and the water availability analysis was not ever fully completed. The budgeting plan from here on out is to continue the same convention. Hold the line item in the Zone 3 budget at about $100,000. I think this year it's $102,000. Hold that steady. If we project, once we get a consultant on board and start looking at contracts and specific tasks, if it goes above that number in total, then that's made up from district reserves and doesn't affect rates. Yeah, I should say that I've looked at a ton of the work with an eye towards how do we move forward and what do we have. And I've tried to avoid bogging myself down at this point in who did what and who didn't do what. I have some theories, but I think I know the whys of how the technical thinking got off track, how it was allowed to do that. I haven't delved into that sort of thing.
Okay, thank you. Okay. All right. Okay, so what I'd like to do now is finish this issue. So we have a motion and a second. So let's take a vote. So all in favor of this motion and second, please. We just need a voice vote, yes?
It's your pleasure, but voice vote's fine.
Okay, so all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any noes?
No.
No, okay. We have a no? Mm-hmm. We have a no here?
Okay. Discussion?
No.
May I ask who the no was? I didn't.
It's me.
Madam Chair, may I ask why?
Sure. Please. Yeah.
For the reason that Jim said, that I just don't think we need to direct tack as to what exactly we want. Because in their expertise, they're going to decide whether it's an RFP or an RFQ or whether they're going to do a scope or maybe they're going to do both or I don't know. I'd rather just give them direction to figure out what they're going to do and come back to us. Because if we give them direction and they go outside that direction, then we create problems. So that's why. I'd rather that be looser for them in the way that Jim said.
Please.
The motion directs staff to work with TAC to look at and develop either an RFQ or an RFP and to bring back that RFQ or RFP to the advisory board for approval prior to release.
Well, again, I'm just part of where this is coming from, Chris, isn't trying to be obstructive or anything. It's just, like I said, Teresa asked me, for example, to talk about whether or not we're going to do a scope and what that scope's going to look like, and that's not mentioned in there either. And that may, the way she explained it to me, may supersede an RFP and go with an RFQ or whatever. I just don't want to, I don't know this well enough to be able to say this is exactly what I want, even if it's just those two things that you suggested. There might be other options that I'm not aware of. And that this group isn't aware of. There are a lot of new people sitting here. Mm-hmm. So I'd rather just give them direction to figure out what the best course of action is and come back to us in September. And they're not going to move anywhere on it. As Mark said, they're probably not going to get that far anyway.
I think you're right.
Now, my understanding, when the motion was made and then the discussion between the motion maker and the staff was that they felt that they were good with the direction that they could work with TAC, and they felt that they felt comfortable with that. So, I mean, I don't want to tie their hands at all. So, if that's what we're doing with this motion, then I'm not comfortable with it myself.
And I didn't see in the motion that we were limiting ourselves to, or pigeonholing ourselves in any sort of direction. It was open for what was going to be discussed as circulated RFQ or RFP, and then discussing tasks, including, so they're going to be discussing what tasks need to be done with the TAC.
And,
John, you're going to report the motion. Can you tell us what it says?
After I watch it on the video.
There we go.
Yeah. It was endorsed moving forward with the TAC on a reform project team, including the circulation of an art.
It does include circulation for development of a request for qualifications or our request for proposals for hydrologic tasks, including modeling, hydrogeologic analyses, and production of a water availability analysis, and that RFQ or RFP would be brought to the advisory board for approval prior to circulation, so that the advisory board has the authority to review and approve it before it's released. That was the motion.
Okay. Well, I mean, I can go back and change my vote if that will make you happy, Chris, but we already have a motion that's passed.
I think
okay. If you know, John, if you think that that's going to do fine, then that's not the direction I got. That's why that's not the direction I got from my community development director. So that's all I'm saying. If you think that that's adequate, then that's fine.
It's absolutely adequate.
Then I'll change it to a yes and make Chris really happy right now. So
we won't.
No.
Yeah,
okay.
Don't worry about that.
Okay.
Okay.
So
you can consider it a unanimous vote so that everybody's happy.
Bart was a no. Were you a no?
No,
okay.
Oh, wait.
Okay.
You were a no as well for the same reason, no?
No.
Oh, it was just me?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right.
All righty then.
All right. Next
so,
item.
So we're all good. I mean, so you don't have to change your vote.
It's fine.
We're fine.
It's fine.
I just want to make sure that staff is that everyone is on task here, and we know that you and that the TAC can go forward, put together a scope of work that's going to get this task done. Right? Okay. Very good. All righty then. Well, I guess we beat that enough, didn't we? So future agenda items is our next item 10.
Yes, and as I mentioned earlier, I'm happy to report that there are some on here. I was a little worried about putting Camp French on here, thinking it might be a bit premature, but there had been an article in the newspaper, and then with the public comment speaker, it's obviously a concern in the community. And as that develops, and I know more, and am involved in more discussions with the Boy Scouts and the community and Parks and Rec, I will most likely just be debriefing you on a every other month schedule, keeping this as a future agenda item, and then when we have some direction needed from your advisory committee, we'll have a agenda item and a discussion on that matter. And then it was asked at the last meeting for a presentation on the potential spillway raise, and that is not a county-led project. That's a City of Pismo Beach-led project, so I worked with Member Vardis on obtaining permission from the City of Pismo Beach to have a presentation for your advisory committee, and they've agreed to do so, and we're targeting September for that presentation from the City of Pismo Beach. And then finally, also, a request from your advisory committee is to have a water treatment plant tour, and those historically are actually scheduled meetings, so they're open to the public, and we will target September as well as having a meeting held and then continued till the evening session where we'll have our regularly scheduled meeting. And I encourage you all to go on the tour. I did it about a year and a half ago, and found it to be quite fascinating and informative.
That would be helpful. And then, I don't know if this would be an appropriate time, but I would like to also then request that we get a report on the contract fulfillment of Stetson and Hansen. Is this an appropriate time to request that?
What exactly are you requesting?
If this board would agree. The two consultants, Stetson, I believe it is, and Hansen.
Are you asking for basically what Mary was asking
yes.
for? Sure.
An investigation this, of.
Well, I just like to. Said wanted to consult with counsel or something.
Oh, okay.
I'd like to know. We paid Stetson $415,000. I'd like to know if, in fact, they did fulfill their contract. Hansen, $178,000 and change.
I can add that.
Can I ask you a quick question about?
If
you don't need a motion for that, do you? Or?
If the board agrees.
Proposed future agenda item.
Yeah.
I don't think so. That
well, we generally
being recommended
do
by the
at
chair,
our council
and if
meetings.
The chair's wanting that on the agenda.
I mean, I prefer that that
you're
our. I prefer that. That the others agree? Okay, great. Thank you.
I actually do think in the past we have had motions for items to be brought back to the.
I'll second Chair Bright's motion.
Okay.
Anyone else? Anything else?
No. We can call for a vote on that.
Okay.
We need a vote on that then.
Oh, okay, since we had. That's a motion now. Okay, then all in favor?
Aye.
Say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None? All right, then. Very good.
I have a quick question about Camp French before we move on.
Okay.
You know, Chris Haggerty at the beginning suggested that the Boy Scouts were talking about walking away from that on September 1, and that, of course, the first thing that popped into my head was Zone 3 doesn't meet until after that date. Mm-hmm. And so I just don't know if that's going to be a concern, that we might have to call a special meeting of some kind if that's falling under our purview, but we're not going to meet before. We may have a little bit of an oversight issue there. I don't know what would happen in the interim.
We've held special meetings in the past. We've had one for adoption of the budget before. If they walked away, they could walk away tomorrow, and there's nothing we can do about it. Your role would be what is the vision of the future use of that property. So regardless of when that happens, and that's the first time I've heard it being proposed of September 1. I didn't know there was a date in consideration. The site would sit idle, and we would come to your board. We would find out if you wanted to hold a special meeting. Probably wouldn't be necessary, but
okay.
At the next regularly scheduled meeting, come to your board with a set of sort of expectations of what the property would be used for in the future, if anything at all.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I was just
wondering
if we had a timing issue.
It's just a financial issue with the Boy Scouts?
As for their operation of it?
Yeah.
That's my understanding, is that they've struggled with revenue for maintaining that facility, and they have quite a few facilities that they operate and maintain and have a limited amount of resources to do so.
Been there a long time.
Very long time.
When my kids went.
Okay, so you will let us know about the tour?
I can tell you now that we will have it in September, and it'll be posted as part of our agenda, that it's going to probably start at 10 a.m., and you'll have to call the meeting to order and take public comment, and then we'll take a tour.
Okay, and it'll be on the day of our next meeting, September
correct.
19th. Okay, swell. All righty then.
And will we have Zone 1-1A each meeting?
The
is it
minutes?
Just an automatic standing? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I include that as a regular item.
Okay.
What was it,
the 19th?
The 19th.
So now we'll move on then to item 11, committee member comments. Any committee member comments?
Not this time.
Very fine. Well, then, I would say at that, we will call this meeting adjourned. Thank you all.